This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Chic. Say Chic. I think this is like a funk thing.
Funk thing or disco thing, I think.
Funk or disco. Yeah, it's Nile Rodgers' band.
Okay.
So this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, released in 1978, just as disco began to peak, Say Chic and its pair of dance floor anthems, Le Freak and I Want Your Love, put Chic at the top of the dizzying peak. The right album at the right time. Say Chic is essentially a rehash of Chic, the group's so-so self-titled debut from a year earlier. The first album also boasted a pair of floor-filling anthems, Dance, 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 and Everybody Dance, and like Say Chic, it filled itself out with a mix of disco and ballads. So essentially, Say Chic does everything its predecessor did, except it does so masterfully. Each side similarly gets its timeless floor filler, Le Freak and I Want Your Love. Quiet Storm Come Down, Savoir Faire, and At Last I Am Free, Feel Good album track Happy Man, and Sometimes You Win, and Moody album cappers Chic Cheer, and Funny Bone. Producers Bernard Edwards and Nile Rodgers were quite a savvy pair and knew that disco was as much a formula as anything. As evidenced here, they definitely had their fingers on the pulse of the movement and used their perceptive touch to craft one of the few truly great disco albums. In fact, you could even argue that Say Chic very well may be the definitive disco album. After all, countless artists scored dance floor hits, but few could deliver an album this solid. And nearly as few could deliver one this epochal as well. Say Chic embodies everything wonderful and excessive about disco at its pixelated peak. It's anything but subtle with its at the disco dance floor mania and after the disco bedroom balladry, and Edwards and Rodgers are anything but whimsical with their disco ballad, disco album sequencing, and pseudo jet set Euro poshness. Chic would follow Say Chic with Good Times, the group's crowning achievement, but never again would Edwards and Rodgers assemble an album as perfectly calculated as Say Chic.
Okay,
so this album was released August 11th, 1978, and the genres are disco and R&B, and came out on Atlantic Records and produced by Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards. And there are 8 songs on the album, and is divided pretty evenly between side 1 and side 2, 4 and 4. So what we like to do is... we like to pause halfway through at the halfway point after side one and discuss the album at the midway point. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, and we've linked the album in the show notes, so you can listen to it on your preferred streaming service. Side one starts with Chic Cheer and ends with Happy Man. So if you want to stop it there while you're listening along. And so without further ado, here is the first song on the album called Chic Cheer. Here we go. All right, and ending side one with Happy Man. I'm really liking this quite a bit, actually. I never thought I would enjoy disco, but I'm actually really, really liking it.
Well, this is definitely, it seems a little bit more like subdued than a lot of disco was at the time, but it still has that, you know, sort of a corporate funk sort of a feel to it and something. So it's sort of like, it's definitely in that vein, but that's not really to denigrate it or anything like that. Cause actually some of the stuff is actually really cool.
I mean, that last song, the bass line on that last song was...
Oh, the bass line.
It was incredible.
I mean, both funk and disco, but yeah, in particular, wouldn't be that without the bass line, so...
No, yeah. Exactly. And I always like that vintage sort of bass tone, that sort of deeper tone to the bass, and I didn't realize... why, like, newer bass didn't really sound like that. And I didn't know this up until fairly recently, is that up until, like, the late 1970s, the only type of strings you could get for bass were flat wound strings. And they didn't have the round wound strings for bass until very late 70s. So... And if you like the flat wound strings give you a deeper sort of darker tone, where the round wound strings give you that brighter tone, which, you know, can be good depending on, you know, the genre and the application. But, you know, I always preferred the sort of darker sort of flat wound sort of tone.
So do I. And I like a hollow body bass with a flat wound string on it. I think they sound amazing. Some people think they sound thuddy and woody, but I like that. I think that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, for disco, that's the other thing, just as a sidebar, is that, you know, the Sly and the Family Stone song, "Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again," was the first song to feature slap bass. And I didn't realize, it's like, why does that slap bass sounds so different than it's because of he's using the flat wound strings. But I've always liked that tone on the bass. And, but yeah, this whole album is really, well, not the first half anyway, is really interesting. I liked the instrumental Savoir Faire. There was some really great guitar playing from Nile Rodgers on that. You know, I was not expecting to hear like some, that was almost like jazz. You know, I wasn't expecting to hear anything like that on this.
It was sort of a smooth jazz, but yeah, it was, I'm trying to say it nicely, but I don't know how to say it nicely sometimes.
Just say it. it's okay.
That's the one song that's like, I didn't dislike it, but it definitely had more of like a corporate sound to it to me.
I know what you mean. It sounds like hold music when you're on customer service.
A little bit.
I know what you mean. I think that kind of music was modeled after this. The corporate stuff didn't really, that it wasn't corporate at the time.
No, it wasn't. No, it definitely came about around this era. And then was, you know, throughout the 80s was very much a thing to endure when you're stuck on the phone. But still, I kind of like, and another thing that I noticed, especially with the Happy Man, I noticed that, but it's seems to be throughout the whole album. The drum sound is very dry, but it's up front, and it's, you know, I've been listening to a lot of stuff with, you know, drums with reverbs lately. They've been coming up on the thing quite a lot, and this is such a stark contrast to that, and you realize what the you know, gated reverb was replacing around this time. But this just still sounds a little bit different yet again from what drums normally sounded like at the time, even.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Like, it's, well, first of all, it, a lot of disco, it really, it, a lot of the, I don't know, the throwaway disco stuff, okay. For lack of a better term, used, it really used the, it was really when drum machines were first becoming common, and all the drums kind of sounded the same, and you had those really laser sounding toms when they would do a fill on the drum machine. But I listened, but this is, it's very obvious that this is not a drum machine. This is, they're using a real drummer here. And so that, I think that sets it apart from a lot of the, like I said, the disposable disco that was out at the time. And when it became like, popular and everybody like
hooked
had
on clap thump.
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff. Like, just the stuff that's just like slapped together.
Yeah.
You know, I think this band in particular, I think they're a band first, and they're doing R&B first, and they just happen to be doing disco, but they're not a disco band, if that makes sense. Like they're it's more funk. It's more R&B based than a lot of the other disco stuff. A lot of the, like, honestly, the other disco is too white, you know, and this is like, these are, you know, this is an R&B band, a black R&B band that's doing disco, which is really where it started. And mm-hmm. It, you know, it's sort of obviously an offshoot of funk and R&B. And then, you know, the white people got a hold of it and realized how much money they can make. And then everything was disco by 1979.
And then very suddenly it wasn't.
Yeah. And there's, I didn't realize, but the whole disco sucks thing and anti-disco, it does have some very racist and homophobic sort of undertones to it.
Yes, I did know that. I mean, a lot of people hated it just because of the music, but a lot of the attitudes that came about around that time were also, yeah, very problematic. It's true. And ultimately, it's just the music of the clubs. I mean, that's what it was. It had evolved into. This was around the time, I don't know, I mean, I guess, you know, clubs or I mean, you think back to even like the big bands or even the waltz or anything like that. You go as far back, there's been music specifically oriented for dancing and stuff like that. But it seems that in the rock and roll era, it became, I guess, sort of like a live band sort of oriented music in a lot of ways. You could definitely dance to it, but that seemed to be almost like a secondary side effect of it. Unless you're like, you know, come on, everybody, let's do the twist and stuff like that. I mean, there's always, you know, exceptions to the rule and stuff like that. But disco seemed to be bringing back a sort of a music that was basically geared to the club again, to the dance club. And I think it was like the first time, at least in a little while, since probably the big band era. But usually at clubs like that, again, I guess it's sort of like the beginning of the DJ in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think they both... Well, yeah, I guess hip hop really sort of began the whole DJ thing. And, you know,
But I mean, like, as far as having like someone in a club sort of playing music, not necessarily being like an MC or a DJ and mixing stuff like that. That sort of came a little bit later, where they're getting a little bit more experimental with the records that they own, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And since the disco era, the club trend never really went away. Like the idea of playing pre-recorded music in a club, it's stayed ever since the disco era, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, I never thought about that, but you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that put it a little better than what I was stumbling on my words trying to say, is the idea of pre-recorded music in a club was sort of started with this. But like, that's what I mean, is like, this music was meant to be that. It was meant to be recorded and then played at a club.
Yeah.
You could hire Chic to play a disco, but that's not normally what happened.
Right. Or you could just put on the record. Yeah, you're right. So the critical reception at the time, it kind of received mixed reviews from critics, but fans really enjoyed it. And, the Canadian newspaper, the Globe and Mail, deemed Say Chic a sleekly elegant variation of disco. But the Los Angeles Times opined that aside from Le Freak, the album consists of pedestrian disco pieces and plodding R&B ballads.
Sort of depends. I think, would you say it was the Globe and Mail that said it was?
No, that was the Los Angeles Times that said the album consists of pedestrian disco pieces and plodding R&B
ballads. Yeah, I know, but who is the other one?
That was the Los Angeles Times, and then the Globe and Mail deemed Say Chic a sleekly elegant variation of disco.
Yeah, that's so, what I meant.
Yeah.
And I think they're a little bit more correct.
I would agree.
Yeah, I think that's that was actually really well put. I guess if it's not your thing, you might agree more with Los Angeles Times, but I don't know. I would say there's a certain elegance to it. If a little bit corporate, there's a definite elegance to it. It's not meant to be too disposable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's trendy, but it's not a novelty record. Like right. Something like Disco Duck is, or something like that.
Oh my God. My dad had to play that in clubs. He hated it. The whole band hated it.
Yeah. So I did. I would too. Yep. So I did manage to find a few facts about the album. So there are actually two different versions of the album. The European version is called Très Chic, and it features two extra songs, one at the end of each side. One called Dance, 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 and Everybody Dance. Not sure why there's a different, it didn't really say why there's a different European version of the album.
Yeah, I don't know.
Seems a little unnecessary.
Instead of calling it Say Chic, it was like, well, that will confuse the French or something.
Yeah.
So let's call it Très Chic.
Très
Chic. Which is, yeah, I guess, more proper or something.
I suppose. I don't know. Yeah. And the song Le Freak was written in response to long lines at Studio 54, which is probably the most well-known disco club,
right,
in New York City. After being refused entry, they wrote the song. So they were standing in line, and Studio 54 is notorious for having very long lines. The story of when they wrote it is another disco singer named Grace Jones invited Nile Rodgers and I forget the bass player's name. What's his name? Bernard Edwards. She invited them to hang out at disco at Club 50 or Studio 54. And they were refused entry by the bouncer. And so they wrote the song, and the initial lyric, instead of
freak out
was fuck off.
Yeah. I did know that. I think the Professor of Rock did a video on it. So it's a pretty good video. But I did hear about that. But again, once they wrote the song, they figured, if we're going to make a hit out of it, there's no way we're going to go into a club and sing fuck off to our audience.
Right.
So we better change it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is Le Freak it's the first song in Billboard chart history to reach number one three separate times. It spent a total of six non-consecutive weeks in the number one spot on the Billboard Hot 100 chart.
Wow. That's pretty good for not Pink Floyd.
Yeah. and this Say Chic was the band's most commercially successful album, reaching number four on the Billboard's album chart and topping the U.S. R&B chart for 11 weeks. Say Chic was on Billboard's 1979 R&B album of the... Oh, Say Chic was Billboard's 1979 R&B album of the year, claiming the number one spot on Billboard's year-end review. So it may have received mixed critical reviews, but it sold really well. It was one of the most popular albums of 1978.
Yeah, probably. I can't think of too many albums from 78 that probably did as big. I don't know. It seemed to be a bit of a stale year. I can think of lots of albums from 79, and I can think of a bunch of albums from 77. I mean, punk was huge in 77. But 78 seems to be a bit of a lull year. So this sort of fills that gap. The Dire Straits record was pretty big too. Yeah, interesting.
So I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do, let's hear from our friends over at the Pick a Disc podcast. Check that out.
Do you like music? Do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick a Disc, where every fortnight a guest comes on to talk about an album for whatever reason they want to. Sometimes I like it, sometimes perhaps even something else other than just like it. You just listen to the podcast and find out. We talk about the album, we talk about the songs, we talk about the artists, we talk about tangent things that are slightly related, and sometimes we deviate off tangents. But don't worry, we'll always bring it back in the end. But you can find us on all your social medias and all the podcast apps for searching for Pick a Disc. You can also find us on the part of the Weedig Podcast Network under Linktree/WeedigPodcasts. And until then, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Okay, and ending the album with Funny Bone. Yeah, I thought this was a pretty solid album overall. One thing I did notice is there wasn't a whole lot of vocals. There are verse and chorus, like, song structure. There was a lot of repetitive, like, one line vocals.
Yeah.
But there weren't a lot of like songs with verses, I suppose.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Nothing was really written that way. And I think that was intentional. For sort of the style that they were going for. I mean, this is mostly made for the club. To keep people on the dance floor. And, you kind of need that sort of repetitive thing to do that with.
Yeah. I suppose my frame of reference for disco, and I didn't realize this until now, really is like the Bee Gees sort of like doing the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever. And really, that's not really disco. It's more like those are pop songs, but they're for the movie and they're sort of songs written about disco rather than disco songs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, they're disco-esque for sure, but they're definitely more of a pop song structure when you get down to it, and it's get down to it.
I think you're right. Those are more pop oriented songs. I did really enjoy the album. I didn't really find myself wanting, I wasn't longing for that sort of more pop format. The verses, I found myself really enjoying the grooves that were being laid down by the bass and the drums. I really enjoyed just listening to the instrumentation, to be honest. I didn't find myself missing that sort of that vocal sort of single singer sort of vocal type of thing.
Yeah. A couple of times I thought the lyrics were a little on the, I don't know, simplistic side, but again, I think that was also intentional.
That's intentional, really just to sort of keep it more the vocals in this were really another instrument,
basically.
Yeah. So it didn't really matter what they were saying, I guess.
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part, except for Le Freak, which is actually about, you know, them being in the club. And that one did have some verse lyrics.
Yeah, a little bit. And again, it's also the pop song on the album for the most part. It's the hit. I mean, almost everybody's heard it.
Everybody's heard it, and that's the one song that gets played on the radio. It's not, and that's a good example of a song that can be listened to on the radio and enjoyed that way. And it also works in a club, and, you know, you can just dance to it. It works on different levels.
Yeah. Obviously, yeah. The single version was shorter than the album version, I would imagine.
I would think so, yeah, because 5.5 minutes is pretty... Well, not now, but it was back then a pretty long song to be played on the radio, on pop radio, for sure. So this might be... This is an interesting question then. So what would be your three highlights of the album?
I gotta go with the songs that probably have the best bassline stuff, like the Le Freak, Happy Man, and that last one, Funny Bone, I think are probably my favorites. Cause they got the groove going.
They got that groove. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to not pick those three. I think those would be my three too. Like those. Yeah, those ones, just that bass line, and it's not just the bass playing is obviously amazing, but it's that tone, that deep sort of thumping tone that just, you know, gets right in there, you know. I would absolutely pick those three. So then that brings us to the question is, would you listen to this again?
Yeah, I probably would. Not all the time, but I might put it on again. It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too. I mean, it's a fun album. If I'm in the mood to just, it's a good album to, like, if you're doing chores, like cleaning around the house or something like that, it's a good album to put on for that sort of thing. It's very upbeat, and it's very, yeah, it's just fun, you know. I mean, there's really no other way to say it. I mean, it's just a fun album. Yeah. But yeah, so I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. If you did enjoy the show, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And we'd love it if you leave us a rating and a review, as it really helps us find new listeners, and or rather helps listeners find us. And if you want to support the show and get some get these episodes the day before they go live, you can head over to Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. Your support really makes a huge difference. And you can also check out the website to get all the updates and everything, and listen to all the past episodes. It's polyphonicpress.com. And yeah, I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.